leaving his drones open to close-range attacks. His jets flared, he boosted back up into the air. In the second that it took, the clawed space marine had already shredded one drone. Sparking wreckage was strewn across the portside wing of the craft. As Cold Wave locked eyes on him, the space marine bridged the gap to the other drone and thrust the claws of his right hand straight through it. There was a snap and a burst of blue sparks. The drone fell. Its lights flickered out. Both of the shield drones were down. The ship's engines were open to attack. Cold Wave yelled his anger and denial and sent a missile roaring from his racks. The space marine was incredibly fast. The missile should have killed him, but he turned from destroying the drone just in time, thrusting up the claws of his left arm like a shield. The missile struck and exploded, blowing him straight off the wing, hammering him heavily onto the rockcrete below. Racing to finish the job, Cold Wave thundered forward across the back of the ship and looked down. No sign of the space marine. He had vanished. Warning glyphs flashed. Another stream of rounds struck his battlesuit's energy barrier and detonated fiercely. This time, the fire had come from the air. The Gwela gunship roared overhead. No, not the same one. This was smaller and faster, less heavily armed and armored. His riptide was out of missiles. As the ship arced away from him, Cold Wave locked on with his ion accelerator. The weapon kicked hard, shaking the whole suit. The lance of deadly light missed the nimble Imperial craft by a finger's width, blistering the stealth-coated starboard wing. The craft banked hard to the right, racing out of lethal range. Cursing, Cold Wave turned his attention to a small force of humans and partially armored space marines running towards the battle from the southeast. He snarled, targeted them, and loosed another blinding blast from his ion accelerator, atomizing one of the humans and scoring a long black gouge in the rockcrete. The others dived or dropped to a knee. Some returned fire, but they were still too far out. He had no time to erase more of them. His shield was struck again, hard, this time from below and to the side. He saw a short, bulky space marine with an oversized weapon unleashing a furious barrage of rounds up at him. Cold Wave flared his jets and leapt from the back of the ship once again. On his HUD, he saw that his razor sharks were now just 2 minutes out. It was almost time for him to get inside. He opened a link and ordered the ship's rear ramp to be lowered. Very soon now, he would leave this damned world behind. How he hated Tychonis! His posting here had been a grievous insult from the start. Only the presence of Aunzi had ever made it worthwhile. They both deserved better. He would make sure the Aun was called to Tau, was recognized, was given his due. He would not leave his beloved leader to languish here. Ahead lay honor and a brighter future for both. Ahead lay priceless redemption and vindication. Ahead lay the salvation of their race, their glorious destiny. Shaso Takan Jaikal would not be denied. Chapter 54. Androcles dived left, hitting hard. It saved his life. The riptide shot scythed across the ground and wiped one of the Elysian stormtroopers, Hamlin, entirely from existence. Not even his boots remained. Spear Team 3 had already lost Nix, Vint, and Norland in the fighting at the Eastern Landing Field, and now Hamlin. Only 2 men remained, Sergeant Grigolitz and Corporal Lund. The Arcturus people were remarkable, as worthy as any human warriors Androcles and the rest of Saber Squad had known. But they were sick from exposure to radiation and severely outgunned. For all his efforts, Androcles hadn't been able to keep them alive. Just up ahead lay the blackened wreckage of Reaper 3. Though scant and inadequate, the wreckage offered the only cover available. Androcles pushed himself to his feet and ordered everyone into sheltered positions behind it. From there, he swiftly surveyed the battle up ahead. The fighting was intense. Talon Squad were a storm of murder on the Tau, but the Blueskins were many, and in the presence of Coldwave, who else could be piloting that riptide, they fought with a ferocity he'd not seen in their kind. They were desperate to effect the escape of the spaceship and their chasseur.
And the Ordo traitor, she is aboard.
No sooner had he thought the word traitor than, as if invoked, Cabanon and Lucianos appeared, jumping down from a hatch in the ship's starboard side to add their fury to the fight. Androcles' eyes locked hard on Cabanon. His blood boiled. He had to hold himself back, suppressing a powerful urge to rush from cover with a battle cry. He had to get closer first. The traitors were in full power armor. He and his brothers were not. A reckless charge was not the right play here. Someone should have told Strigo and Gedeon. The Carcharodon and the Howling Griffin exploded out from behind the wreckage and burst into a full sprint. Gedeon with bolter raised, Strigo with short power swords shimmering. Cabanon and Lucianus did not see them at first, intent on spotting Talon Squad in the melee. Space Marines at full sprint cover ground fast. Strigo was already leaping into the air, swords raised, when Lucianos' senses pricked. He spun around at the last instant and found himself about to be sliced apart. Fast as he was, his reflexes every bit the equal of the Carcharodon's. There was no way he could avoid the blades at this range. Strigo's eyes flashed with the certainty of the kill. There was a bright flash, a hiss and sizzle, twin bursts of white sparks. Strigo stared in disbelief. Lucianos had thrown up his left arm. It had stopped the blades dead. That arm should have been lying on the ground, and the blades buried deep in the traitor's torso. But it was not so. Briefly, the two space marines stood frozen in the moment, their minds catching up with their reflexes. Then Lucianos kicked Strigo hard in the chest. The blow knocked him back 3 paces. Strigo glared at him, confusion giving way to understanding when his eyes settled on the storm shield. The small plate-like deflection field generator was attached to Lucianos' left pauldron where it met his breastplate.
"You fight me shielded, like a coward!"
The deflection field would falter if Strigo's blows could overload it, but he knew now that a single, clean killstroke, the beautiful vengeance he had envisioned, would not be possible. Lucianos ignored the barb.
"You live, brother? I had thought..."
"I am not so easily ended, traitor!"
Lucianos looked genuinely pained at that. Strigo began circling him, hunkered over in a predatory half-crouch, blades ready to lash out again without warning.
"I never sought your death, Strigo," said Lucianos, "nor death for any of you. It burned me to watch the Blueskins take you away. It sickened me. But what could I do? Epsilon gave orders. You sided with Androcles and disobeyed them. It is you who broke your oaths to the Watch and the Ordo. Androcles never understood the importance of what she does here. I warned you not to listen to him, to view things so simplistically. Now we go where you cannot follow, though I would have it otherwise. It is not too late. Join us. Once you understand the..."
Strigo snarled and lunged, a savage lateral swipe. Lucianos slipped it. Strigo followed through, putting his momentum into a whistling backhand slash that with another inch might have taken Lucianos's head. There was a triple burst of bolter fire from the left. Strigo barely managed to raise his blades in time. The bolts exploded on the flat of his swords. The impact sent Strigo skidding 6 meters on his side, his left arm peppered with tiny shards of shrapnel. Cabanon stepped over the freshly slain body of Gedeon and marched straight towards Strigo. The Howling Griffin's skull was a hollowed-out mess. Cabanon's boots tracked dark red blood on the ground as he closed in.
"The others!" boomed the Iron Hand. "Who else survived the fall of the prison? And how?"
A stutter of rounds struck his right pauldron, exploding there. They should have bitten deep gouges in the ceramite, destroying the white icon of the Iron Hand's chapter that graced it, but they did not. Light flickered at the points of impact, Gabanon's own storm shield nullifying the attack. The Iron Hand turned and saw Androcles striding towards him, scout armored only, just like Gedeon and Strigo, but undaunted. Hardly a fair fight, but Gabanon cared little for fairness right now. Outcome was all that mattered. Androcles' stalker bolter was zeroed on his former Alpha's head.
"Betrayer!"
hissed the massive space marine.
"Oathbreaker!"
Gabanon smirked.
"Neither, oaf. Your interpretations are in need of considerable adjustment."
Pelion and Rowan were sprinting off to the left and right, trying to flank the two traitors. Lucianos saw them, saw Strigo push himself up. Shaking his head in resignation, he leveled his bolter at Strigo and began moving left to cut off Pelion's flanking. Gabanon faced Androcles.
"You survived."
"I survived,"
said Androcles. "You won't."
Gabanon shook his head.
"Look around you. You fight a hopeless battle. Turn around now. Don't interfere, and I will let you walk away."
"What worth the words of a traitor?"
Gabanon looked left and right emphatically.
"No traitors here, brother. Just two Adeptus Astartes who see the wider view. I tried to tell you. You had every chance."
Androcles fired again, his rounds aimed straight at Cabanon's forehead. The Iron Hand whipped up his left hand, palm out, and again the bolter rounds exploded without effect, their force nullified by the storm shield.
"Don't be a fool. You cannot win. Withdraw. Return to Talassa Prime or to Damaroth."
"Honor demands that we fight, Gabanon, or have you forgotten honor? And we both know I can beat you. You have seen it for yourself. The stories about my chapter are true. Some call ours the cursed founding, but it is no curse. The sons of Antaeus have never been defeated on solid ground. You will not best me here, despite your war gear."
"You are flesh," grunted Gabanon, "and flesh is weak."
He slung his bolter, flexed his augmetic arms, each a powerful titanium prosthetic, and drew his long black combat knife.
"You question my honor? That I will not forgive. Let us do this up close and personal."
Androcles lowered his bolter reverently to the ground. He drew his combat knife from the sheath at his lower back. Gabanon grinned, supremely confident. They closed on each other, circling slowly.
"What are you doing?"
demanded Rowan over the vox link.
"He is in full plate. You cannot think..."
"It will not avail him, Rowan. You will see. Deal with Lucianos quickly and lend aid to Talon. The Riptide must be slain. Time is against us. Hurry, brothers, hurry!"
His peripheral vision shrank as Gabanon moved into lunging range. The fury of battle all around the ship became a muted, distant thing. Still there in his awareness, but a background only. The universe contracted until all it encapsulated was the space in which they fought. Each dropped into stance, blade arm forward, free hand placed for the quick parry. Androcles was a giant of a space marine. Even unarmored, he stood as tall and almost as broad as Gabanon did in full plate. His strength was prodigious, his training and experience comprehensive. He trusted to that now. Gabanon snorted.
"Let's be at it. I have a flight to catch."
Their blades flashed towards each other. Sparks flew. For one of them, the last fight of his life had begun. Chapter 55.
"Scholar!"
voxed Routh.
"The ramp!"
Karras turned, saw the ship opening its rear hatch like the jaws of some ocean leviathan. Abruptly, the fire carders all around them turned the pressure right up, becoming bolder, more ferocious. Talon Squad found themselves pressed back into cover behind rows of crates, unmanned loaders, and other Tau machinery. The air all around was filled with fire, ionized particles sharp in Voss's nostrils, as he said,
"Hemmed in here. Lots of targets in close proximity. Wouldn't now be a perfect time to fry them all, Scholar? As you did the Steelers back on Kiara."
Karras and Routh glanced at each other. The Geller field generator was obviously on the ship, activated, isolating its contents from the warp. Standing 40 meters from the hull, Karras could feel its effects, the field pressing against his soul, its resonance stemming the flow of power from the immaterium to his mind. The effect was much more localized than at Alel Atarag, and far denser as a result. Epsilon, he guessed, must have configured it to the ship's shape and size in readiness for their voyage. Her specimens were definitely on board. Even if he could have summoned a storm of witchfire, as the Imperial Fist had suggested, he would not have taken the chance. No horror he'd ever known had compared to the battle for his soul. A battle he'd not won alone, he reminded himself sourly, and not won by much either. He might be first codicier of the Death Spectres, his gift considered powerful beyond all but that of Athiocordatus. But he was no longer willing to put his soul on the line. Never again would he be so reckless, so dependent on the warp, throwing open his inner gates completely to the full flow. Routh had been all too clear. If Karras's purity was threatened again, the exorcist would execute him. And rightly so. "My gift is diminished, brothers," he said. "The Geller field generator is on that ship. Epsilon hides within, hoping to run out the chrono. Let's crush that hope."
"The Riptide will have us the moment we try for the ramp, Scholar," said Solarian.
"Then you will distract it," said Karras. "I must get inside."
"Big ship," said Voss. "Lot of Tau in there."
Karras reached up and touched the grip of Archiman, where the Force sword protruded over his right pauldron. He couldn't feel the weapon's warlike spirit, the link between them severed in the presence of the suppressing field. But the flawless blade would make short work of any Tau at close range regardless.
"I hope so," said Karras. "My sword has yet to be blooded."
"I'll handle the Riptide, Scholar," said Zeed. "The rest of you can enjoy the show." Voss grunted.
"Milk-skinned idiot, it already clipped your wings. You're only alive because you rolled under the hull."
"Jets at 70% efficiency, you over-muscled ape," replied Zeed. "More than enough."
Solarian pointed to a tall stack of supply crates on the edge of the battle.
"High ground. I'll be there."
He did a quick check of the rounds in his rifle's magazine and slapped it back into place.
"I'm going after the Riptide with Paperface," said Voss. "Two will cause it a lot more trouble than one."
Zeed shrugged. "Do your worst, Cannonball. The kill will still be mine."
"Watcha," said Karras.
The exorcist threw him a dark look.
"Fine. You're with me. Just stay out of blade range once we're inside," said Karras. "That Riptide will have advanced optics and sensor arrays.
But let's throw smoke anyway. I'm counting on the three of you to keep him off us. Don't go getting killed."
Voss leaned out from cover and said,
"Tau infantry moving up, trying to flank."
Squads were converging on them from three directions.
"Let's get on with this," said Solarian.
"Optics to multispectrum now," said Karras.
Talon Squad blink clicked their helm lenses to enhanced vision mode. Karras nodded to Routh, and the two fired smoke grenades from their underbarrel launchers. Voss and Solarian tossed grenades by hand. Great clouds of dense grey billowed up, cloaking everything. To the Adeptus Astartes, the world around them was still perfectly clear, defined now by heat, radiation, and air displacement instead of visible light.
"Go!"
said Karras. Zeed's jets flared white-hot. One moment he was there, right among them, the next only a churning vortex of smoke remained.
Voss sidestepped straight out of cover. He sighted on a broad line of approaching fire warriors, pressed the trigger of his Infernus, and began cutting them down with heavy bolter rounds. Solarian set off at a run for the high ground he had marked. Karras and Routh sprinted for the ramp, now fully lowered. Tau was spilling out of it by the score. Ignoring the smoke, their own helm optics cycled to thermal to negate it. The Space Marines ran headlong towards them, their silenced bolters coughing death at close range, gunning down the clustered enemy in swathes. Soon, the two Death Watch brothers were leaping over crumpled bodies and bounding up the ramp into the gaping vastness of the rear hold. Up ahead, Earthcast Tau were securing tanks and crates to lugs set in the floor. Karras maglocked his bolter to his thigh and slid Archiman from his back. He and Routh strode forward, hulking black avatars of death that made the Tau look like children. Their footfalls shook the plating on the floor. The Earthcast technicians turned too late. Archiman flashed in the light as Karras cut them down, their blood splashing the walls and deck. He and Routh pressed on down a broad central corridor. There were doors off to the left and right, most too small for a space marine to squeeze through. Ahead, a set of stairs ran upwards to the next deck. The two Adeptus Astartes surged up them, emerging into another large hold filled with rows of cryogenic pods. A dozen larger pods stood to the sides, secured to the walls, arranged vertically. All were sealed and covered. "Hybrids on the floor," thought Karras. "Pure strains at the sides." Among the pods, Earthcast workers moved back and forth, fastidiously checking readouts on the top of each. Beyond them, a tall, slender shape in black stood tending to a waist-high machine, a thing of strange, ugly geometry and unnatural energy. It was a distinctly imperial construction, out of place in a Tau ship, surrounded by Tau constructions and Tau workers. Just looking at it caused Karras' skin to prick. He felt a stabbing pain somewhere in his head, just behind his eyes. "It's the Geller field generator from her ship." The woman turned, sensing eyes on her. Black hair shimmered like silk around a pale, narrow face. "Whatever you do, Death Watch," she told them, placing a hand on the surface of the machine, "do not damage this. You understand what would happen?" Karras marched towards her, sheathing Archiman on his back. Earthcast tech scurried out of his way, faces tight with fear. Routh stayed back, bolter raised, glaring at them through red lenses, daring them to make a move. "We are leaving," Karras told Epsilon. She smiled, but there was no warmth in it. She was beautiful by the standards mortal men assigned to such things. He couldn't read her aura within the Geller field, but he hardly needed to. There was a cold, ruthless cast to her features. "She is most definitely a creature of the Inquisition," thought Karras. "She reminds me of Sigmar. Any means necessary, and honor be damned." He removed his helm. The woman was unintimidated by the murderous scowl on his colorless features. "Come with me, Death Watch," she said simply. "Come with me, deep into Tau space, to a place left long abandoned, and I will show you the need for all of this. If you judge me wrong then, you may take my life. But I tell you now, once you see it, once you understand, any price will seem a paltry sum, and all I have done will be justified in your eyes."
"Al-Rashak," said Karras.
She nodded. "Al-Rashak. A warp anomaly unlike any other. Lost in the past, believed to be no more than a legend. It is real. And through it,
The mistakes of the past could be erased. The Emperor could be spared his eternal suffering upon the Golden Throne. Mankind could rule over all. Our endless war ended at last.
You dance close to heresy, woman, spat Routh.
I am of the Inquisition, she bit back. I decide what constitutes heresy.
Karras shook his head. You're mad, and I have orders. I must take you back. You have crossed too many lines.
I cannot go back. Not now. I have the Tau exactly where I want them. Here, on Tychonis, I have advanced Black Seed further than anyone at Facility 52 could have imagined. Omicron would order you to assist me if he could only...
Omicron? She laughed.
You do not even know who you work for. Did you think Sigma sat at the apex?
I care not where he sits, said Karras.
He rounded on the woman, gripping her by the upper arm.
Enough words, he growled, thrusting his fearsome face at hers. You are coming with us. Your business here is over.
Epsilon's eyes blazed with anger. In a blur, her hand flashed towards his face. She was incredibly fast, neurally augmented, a lethal weapon in her own right. But she was no space marine. Karras caught her wrist 4 inches from his cheek. He turned his red eyes to her hand, saw the ring there, the spike that had emerged from it, the black poison on its point.
It takes a rare poison to kill a space marine, he growled, low and threatening. But you'd have access to just such a thing, wouldn't you?
He considered breaking her arm. He squeezed it instead until she hissed in pain through clenched teeth.
Watch ya! Barked Karras. Execute them all!
Routh quickly and methodically slaughtered the Tau techs, dropping each one with a single shot to the head, while Karras marched between them, pulling Epsilon along with him. As she was dragged hopelessly forward, the woman reached her free hand between the folds of her dress. From a holster on her inner thigh, she pulled a small, high-yield plasma pistol and quickly jammed the muzzle to Karras's skull. As tall as she was, she had to stretch to manage it. There was a sound like a muffled cough. Her hand suddenly stung, sharp and incredibly painful. Routh had shot the weapon from her grasp. She was lucky. By choice, he had left her fingers intact. He kept his stalker bolter's muzzle trained on her.
Next time, woman, he warned, I'll take an arm.
Karras swung her around, red eyes blazing. Holding his rage in check, he made a decision.
Sleep a while, he said,
and struck her on the jaw with just enough force to knock her out. He slung her limp form over his left shoulder, turned and walked past Routh.
Easier this way, he told the exorcist.
Routh's eyes were on the Geller field generator.
Scholar,
Karras paused beside him.
Speak. I'm not leaving that intact and in Tau hands.
Karras turned and looked from the machine to Routh and back again.
It is the only thing suppressing the Tyranid call.
To destroy it would damn every living being on this planet, Watcher. The rebel tribes have supported us from the start. I would not damn them by...
Routh's bolter barked. Exploding rounds struck the generator, biting great holes in the metal, turning it to smoking scrap. Waves of psychic light briefly danced and flickered around its shattered form, then vanished.
In Terra's holy name, spat Karras.
Routh met his gaze unflinching.
You've just doomed an entire world. I've doomed nothing, said Routh coolly. Give me every piece of explosive ordnance you've got.
There was a second of tense silence. Then Karras hit the release on his webbing and handed it to Routh. Routh took it, stepped around him, and strode back into the hold.
Get her away and leave these monstrosities to me. They won't have time to call the hive mind.
Karras shifted Epsilon on his shoulder and continued down the ramp to the lower hold. The Geller field was down. He felt the warp all around him again, its tides crashing against his inner gates, unable to flow through while he kept them firmly closed. Archimand's soul was there, a presence again, hungry for lives, its aura bleeding into and blending with his own. He sensed his battle brothers outside, their signatures flaring and flowing with the rush of battle. And something else, something that dominated all, a new ethereal presence of imposing power and weight. He couldn't pinpoint it, couldn't identify its nature or its location. It seemed to be everywhere at once, and yet somehow nowhere. It was vast and potent, and it defied all his attempts to probe it with his mind. He knew one thing without a doubt. It was far more powerful than he. And he had a feeling seated deep in his gut like a lead weight, that Talon Squad had finally seized Epsilon, only to have her taken away.
Chapter 56. Zeed jumped, jets flaring, launching him into the air at an angle just as the Tau grenade went off. It would have taken a leg, maybe both. It hadn't done that, but it had forced him out of cover and up into plain sight. A hail of fire from the ground leapt up towards him. He cut his jets and dropped hard, straight at the enemy squad engaging him, their fire sizzling and cracking as it smacked into his ceramite greaves. He landed right on top of one of them, crushing the alien soldier's bones to powder, an instant kill. His claws flashed as he cut the others down before boosting away again, slipping under the fuselage of the Tau ship in time to evade another barrage. Coming up on the other side, he found himself confronted with the towering form of the Riptide. The Riptide's AI-assisted sensory suite tagged the Raven Guard immediately. Cold Wave whirled the battlesuit around to face him, sweeping the barrel of his ion accelerator in a lateral arc almost too fast to see. Zeed boosted straight up, his only chance to evade, and crashed hard into the underside of the spacecraft's wing. His jump pack took damage, his jets cut off, unresponsive. He hit the ground. Red runes blazed on his retinas, adrenaline surged, his primary and secondary hearts raced. He pushed himself up onto hands and knees, shook off the impact, and looked up at the Riptide. The wide muzzle of the battlesuit's primary weapon began to glow, charged particles gathering there as it prepared to fire.
"Not like this," he silently raged. "Not on your knees, Space Marine!"
As he straightened on his knees to face his killer, he tugged a Thundershock EMP grenade free and tossed it. A last blow before he was erased from the world. It detonated just as Cold Wave was about to fire. The glow vanished. The weapon had shorted out. The Thundershock had detonated dead center, right over the Riptide's cockpit, not with enough force to shut the battlesuit down, but with enough to penetrate the shield and interfere with several subsystems. A halo of light flickered intermittently around it. The battlesuit's shield phasing in and out as the AI-enhanced defense control systems struggled to cope with electromagnetic disruption. Movement control systems were unaffected. The Riptide stepped forward, Cold Wave filled with fresh rage and murderous intent. As the battlesuit's three-toed foot hit rockcrete, there was a flash of burning light. Twin lances of las cannon fire hammered into the shield generator on the Riptide's left arm. The disc-shaped generator exploded. Hot fragments hit the ground. The Riptide staggered and sank to a metal knee. Zeed turned towards the source of the blast. To the south, he saw Chiron. The Lamenter was storming towards the battle, and he was not alone. Beside him strode the unmistakable figure of a Space Marine in Terminator armor, flanked by five others. Scimitar Squad lived.
"The Chasseur finally shows himself," boomed Yanis Broden over the Vox.
and seals his death by that mistake.
It was what the Black Templar had been waiting for. Certain that Cold Wave wouldn't come out until the last moment, Broden had ordered his kill team to stay buried, to let the Tau think them dead, let false confidence ensnare them until that moment, that critical moment, when the Firecast commander could hide no longer, when the ship had to emerge on the landing field. At that moment only, the full fury of the Death Watch would erupt and rain righteous slaughter down on the contemptible Tau. Broden had used the others to keep the Blueskins occupied, to misdirect them. Talon, Saber, and the spear teams would whittle away at the Tau forces until Scimitar was ready to take the prize. Now, with the Riptide shield crippled and a fresh wave of foes closing in, Cold Wave was forced to confront the possibility that he might not survive this. At a thought, he commanded his Riptide's pilot support system to pump neuroaccelerators into his body. They hit his system hard. Within 2 seconds, he felt wired, hyper-aware. How long until his Razor-Shark reinforcements arrived? 1 minute. He saw the clawed space marine rolled under the ship and out of sight. He couldn't follow. Too little clearance under there for the Riptide. He would catch that one on the other side. Fire struck his left arm again from the south. His jump jets flared. He was a blur as he leapt away from the danger, arcing north to the other side of the ship, there to be shielded from the las cannon and assault cannon fire by its armored bulk. As he leapt, he ordered several fire carders to eliminate those arriving from the south. Scimitar and Chiron were in the open. The fire warriors dashed to appropriate cover positions and began blazing away. Chiron and Broden, largest of the targets, soaked up a tremendous amount of fire. They staggered, runes flaring red, cooling and shielding systems struggling to cope. But they didn't stop. They pushed forward. Broden's storm shield negated much of the heat and kinetic energy he had taken, but it was close to shorting out. Chiron's thick plate weathered the worst for him, but that too was nearing its limits. It was gouged and pitted so deep that in places the titanium frame beneath was beginning to show through. Sunstrom of the Executioners was hit hard and dropped to a knee, blackened flesh showing through a hole in his cuirass, right over his upper abdomen. He grunted in pain and swung his frag cannon's muzzle around on a cluster of Blueskins on his 11 o'clock. The weapon chugged, shunting a heavy grenade round in a high arc. It struck behind the fire carder's cover and detonated, cutting down half a dozen of them. Their wounds were grievous. Blue blood pumped out. 3 died within seconds. The others cried out, but their fellows had no time to aid them. The pressure from Scimitar was too great.
"Forward, Death Watch!" shouted Broden. "The Emperor's eyes are upon us. Death to the Xenos in his holy name!"
On the starboard side of the ship, Zeed slammed himself into cover beside Voss.
"Damned Riptide almost had me," he growled, "if old Junkbox hadn't fired on him."
"Looks like the Raven has been grounded," said Voss, noting the significant damage to Zeed's jump pack.
"I'll still never be as slow and clumsy as you, you Grox. Besides, I'm rerouting power. My jets will be back to 40% in a few seconds. Once they are, I'm taking another shot at that bastard."
"You've got tunnel vision. My kill count is at least triple yours now."
The Raven Guard laughed.
"If I take down the Riptide, you lose, whatever your count is."
He maglocked his lightning claws to his cuisses, pulled his bolt pistol and started one-shotting Tau infantry that were trying to flank from the right.
"Where are they all coming from?" said Voss. "They're like ants."
"So crush them like ants,"
rumbled a familiar voice over the vox.
"About time you showed up, Scrap Heap," laughed Zeed. "I see you picked up some strays on your travels. Try to force the Riptide into cover so I can close for a kill."
"I give the orders, Raven Guard," snapped Broden.
"You went offline, Templar," said Voss in reply. "Archangel is back in command."
"No longer," said Broden. "Does the woman yet live?"
on your 5, Scimitar, replied Copley on the vox. 300 meters from you, and closing.
Why did you leave the control tower? You were ordered.
Assumed you were dead, Scimitar. Made a tactical decision. No time to lay it out for you.
Look west. 9 o'clock. High.
Voss and Zed turned and glanced up. 6 sleek shapes were screaming in towards the battle. The Razor Sharks from Na'tol. As the Space Marines were looking at them, 2 more shapes swung in to join the formation. The 2 Razor Sharps that had been in a holding pattern out of range since early in the assault. Now they had the reinforcements they had been waiting for. Behind Voss and Zed, the hum of the Tau spaceship's engines intensified, vibrating the rockcrete underfoot.
Kyron, said Voss urgently. Start hitting the portside engine. Your las cannons might be all we have that can take it out.
Do it,
ordered Broden. The Razor Sharks were dropping speed and altitude. They'd already marked Kyron and Scimitar squad. They were out in the open. So too were Copley and Spear Team 1, easy targets all. Chiron's las cannons blazed. The beams hit the engine housing dead center, but the armor was thick. It glowed white hot, but the engine continued to power up unhindered. The weapon recharged. Chiron fired again.
Keep hitting it, Broden told him.
The Razor Sharks were seconds away from raining death down upon them. There was nowhere to go, no cover within reach.
Moving to engage air targets, said a voice over the main vox channel.
Out of the east, 3 black shapes materialized, engines at full power, guns already blazing. They cut straight into the path of the Razor Sharks. A hurricane of fire was exchanged. The lead Razor Shark was shredded, its carcass spun, shedding metal and advanced ceramics, striking a storage building on the eastern edge of the landing field and exploding on contact. Reapers 1 and 2 took the full force of Seeker missiles, slamming into their cockpits. In the instant before the missiles hit, knowing with certainty that this was the end, Ventius and Graka angled their craft for a mid-air collision. Reaper 2 fell just short, almost grazing the Razor Shark on the trailing edge of the formation. Reaper 1 turned starboard side up at the last moment, its wings sheared right through the same Razor Shark that had killed it. 3 ruined aircraft plunged to the ground. Black Eagle, largest and toughest of all, was hit hard by burst cannon fire, but the additional armor on the Thunderhawk's hull saved it, or so it seemed. As the Thunderhawk flew on between 2 of the Tau jets, their tail-mounted ion cannons locked onto it, they hammered the gunship with streams of glowing rounds. Black Eagle's armor would have endured, but the dorsal engine was struck dead on. It erupted in flame and black smoke. She was down to 1 turbine now, and it was struggling. Several cooling lines had been ruptured in the first fuselade. Engine temperature went straight into the red. The last turbine began stuttering and coughing, then spewing out thick black smoke. The pilot, Tarval, knew his aircraft didn't have long. He wrestled with her controls and managed to turn her north. On a trail of smoke, raining debris as she came, the Thunderhawk gunship streaked towards the much larger Tau ship on the ground.
"Let's make a difference," he said to his ship. "One last time."
Black Eagle smashed straight into the Tau ship's portside engine mount. There was a stutter of explosions. Fire and smoke rolled outwards in an angry sphere. The Tau ship was shunted hard, swinging around anti-clockwise on gravitic impellers. The lowered rear ramp threw up fountains of sparks where it scraped a black curve in the rockcrete. Copley had witnessed the bravery of the autopilots. They had saved those on the ground from the Razor Shark attack run. She was wordless, powerfully moved by their brave sacrifice. There were no more Imperial gunships now, no more air support. They had given their last. They had died with honor, exemplars of warrior spirit. Now, with the remaining Razor Sharks banking for another run, she and her Elysians were as good as dead. It wasn't much, but maybe the smoke from the wreckage of the downed aircraft might offer a slightly better chance. If they could make it.
Sprint!
She yelled. The Tau jets were so damnably fast. Rounds began stitching the ground, most towards the Space Marines just up ahead, but enough towards her and her men that death looked imminent. The Elysians were still far short of the wreckage when the worst came. Chiron and Broden were hit hard, rounds drumming on them like rain. Again, dense armor and shimmering storm shield resisted, absorbing and negating the deadly force. Chiron's torso and shoulders shed hot shards of armor at an alarming rate, as the fire from the jets staggered him. Another barrage like that would be his end. Two of the Razor Sharks fired Seeker missiles, four in total, their guidance systems spearing in with a solid visual lock on the Lamenter. As the missiles closed fast, Broden cut in front of the dreadnought, placing himself directly in their path. A hail of rounds from his assault cannon cut two of the missiles from the air. They bloomed into bright fire just 30 meters away. The remaining missiles got through. Broden braced. His Terminator armor was struck dead on, each missile smashing into his massive breastplate. As powerful as the tactical dreadnought armor was, the Black Templar would certainly have been killed outright, were it not for the power of his storm shield. The barrier took the full impact of both missiles and turned it aside. Then it overloaded and died. Broden had been lucky. A third missile would have slain him. Coppola's people had thrown themselves to the ground. Rounds ripped into the rockcrete all around them. Then the strike fighters, screaming so low on the strafing run that their passage almost pulled Copley into the air, angled up and climbed away. Broden had steadied himself by then. He turned and fired furiously at the rearmost of the Tau jets. It was moving too fast. His rounds fell short.
"Get to that Tau ship,"
he ordered all members of Scimitar and Spear Team 3.
"Now! Before they turn!"
Copley's body ached all over. It didn't want to move. The sickness had almost done its work on her.
"Fight!" she told herself. "Get up and run!"
She screamed through a clenched jaw as she pushed to her knees, then from knees to feet. She hefted her hotshot lasgun and turned to the others.
"Up, all of you! We're almost there!"
Only Triskel rose. The others, all seven, lay unmoving. Copley stared, her eyes roving from one inert body to another. She noted the blackened edges of limbs blasted away, the deep, charred craters cut into smoking torsos.
"No!"
Triskel stepped in front of her. She looked up, eyes wet.
"No!"
she said, barely a whisper.
"Warrior deaths, ma'am,"
said the corporal, hardening his expression against the emotions that were warring inside him.
"Well earned peace. They'll be waiting for us when we're done here."
He had dark rings around his eyes. His skin was yellowing. He didn't have much time either. They turned and looked at the Tau ship. Black Eagle's great metal carcass burned fiercely beside it. The Thunderhawk's prow speared straight into the side. The portside engine of the Xenos ship was dead. The other engine could still be heard, its tone rising. Tau infantry were blasting away at bulky black forms in hard cover.
"Talon Squad!"
Cold Wave's Riptide was once again standing boldly on the back of his ship, looking for a clear shot at the members of Karras's kill team.
"Tava has bought us a few more minutes," said Copley. She coughed. Her breathing was becoming ragged. Triskel nodded. "He has that. The mission objective is still aboard that ship, Corporal. What say we join the rest of the task force and..."
And what? Even if they secured Epsilon, there was no way to exfiltrate her now. Black Eagle gone. Reaper flight, gone. The Tau had total air control. Epsilon was surely beyond reach now.
Still?
Copley looked at Triskel and gave a weak, tired smile.
You know, Corporal, I think I'd just like to see what the bitch looks like in person.
Chiron and Scimitar squad were back on the move, storming towards the ship again, eager to get to cover before the remaining Tau jets banked for another attack. Copley and Triskel started running. They were almost at the ruin of the Thunderhawk, with Tau pulse and plasma fire arcing out to meet them. When Coldwave's Riptide strode to the edge of the spaceship's starboard wing, locked sights on Chiron, and unleashed the Tau commander's boundless fury. Chapter 57. Space marine senses are unlike those of mortal men. To an Adeptus Astartes, the world is sharper, more vivid, more vibrant in every way. A normal man would be overloaded and overwhelmed. Even while all his conscious focus fixed on the deadly knife fight with Cor Cabanon, Androcles' back brain was registering and processing the storm of battle all around him. He heard the screaming approach of the Razor Sharks. He registered the bright explosions as they clashed with the Imperial gunships in the air. He and Cabanon were almost caught in the blast when the dying Thunderhawk rammed itself into the Tau ship. They parted from their duel momentarily, stepping back from the heat of the flames and the hail of hot metal debris. The impact and explosion shunted the Tau ship almost a full quarter turn anti-clockwise. Androcles noted the cessation of heat and light from the engine.
One down. That will stall them, but not for long.
He tracked the movement of the massive Riptide battlesuit as it thundered across the top of the ship. For a moment, he thought the lethal machine would turn its ion weapon towards them and eliminate him and Cabanon both. But Coldwave seemed content to let them fight it out. The Chasseur had other foes in his sights. So the knife battle resumed, a hate-fueled blur of stabbing, slashing, parrying, and slipping. Androcles already had two deep gashes on his free arm, and one high on the shoulder of his knife arm. His Laraman's organ, implanted over a century ago, when he had still been a mere aspirant, was already stemming the flow. Healing cells gathered at each wound, forming thick scar tissue. It was no easy thing to kill an Adeptus Astartes with a blade. Cabanon had not gone unscathed. Androcles had managed to clinch with him momentarily, long enough to get purchase on the Iron Hand's storm shield and finally rip it from its mount. The price of that was the wound on Androcles' shoulder, the result of a whip-like slash from Cabanon as he pulled back out of range. But it was worth it to remove the energy barrier that was protecting the dishonorable cur. Eyes locked, they circled each other again.
"You fight well, brother," said Cabanon, "but you are outmatched. You know it now."
Androcles snorted.
"So you wish it, but I am as fresh as when we started, Oathbreaker. You overestimate your advantages. I'd be dead already if it were within your abilities. And you're running out of time. Your assault on Cadiza has failed, fool. You've lost the air. Your forces are dwindling. I have all the time in the world."
As this was said, Androcles caught a flicker of something in Cabanon's eye. Instinct moved him faster than thought. He spun, but it was too late. Lucianos was there behind him, his face mere inches away. He dipped, cinched his arms around Androcles' waist and hoisted the son of Antaeus up into the air. Androcles grunted as the traitor's grip forced all the air from his lungs. He glared down at Lucianos and was surprised by the sadness he saw in the traitor's eyes. Then Cabanon's knife punched deep into his back, right between two vertebrae, severing the nerves. suddenly paralyzed, knowing that this was his end. Androcles could only watch. He saw Lucianos's eyes become wet with tears, saw his lips move.
"Forgive me, brother!"
Gabanon ripped the knife free, then thrust again, this time up under the fused ribcage and into Androcles's secondary heart. There was no pain. Androcles registered his murder as if he were a spectator only, disconnected from all feeling, reduced to watching it play out, helpless to act. Tears spilled over Lucianos's cheeks as Gabanon's knife struck home a third time, cleaving Androcles's primary heart, ending the life of a space marine who had been hero and champion to his chapter brothers, chosen by the Death Watch, a paragon of honor and integrity. He deserved a far better death, but fate and the universe cared little for what a man deserves. Gabanon tugged his blade free and stepped back, flicking the blood from it.
"Drop him," he told Lucianos.
Lucianos laid the limp body down gently on the ground and straightened, staring at it, guilt and sorrow writ clear on his face.
"I wonder if he was right," said Gabanon.
Lucianos looked up, eyes narrowing.
"What?" "I was trying to kill him from the start. It should have been a simple thing, but it wasn't."
He thrust his chin at the cooling body.
"I did not beat him while his feet touched dry land. Had you not lifted him up, brother? But we'll never really know."
Lucianos turned away, scowling.
"Sometimes, brother, I think I hate you."
Gabanon sheathed his knife and gestured for them to make for the Tau ship. Something whined in the air like a mosquito. Lucianos's skull exploded. His headless body dropped to its knees, then pitched forward, dark blood pumping from the open neck. Gabanon whirled, but could see no attacker.
"Talon III, the Ultramarine!"
Solarian's prowess with a sniper rifle was said to be unmatched.
Where was he?
Gabanon had to get to cover. Before he could move, his senses twitched. On impulse, he threw his mechanical left hand up in front of his face. There was a buzz and a crack. The hand shattered into 1,000 metal pieces. Shrapnel bit into Gabanon's cheeks and forehead. He shook off the pain and steadied himself.
"Damned sniper coward!"
When he looked up, he saw Brother Strigo barreling towards him like a bull rhinox. He leapt for his bolter where it lay on the rockcrete, swept it up, and leveled it at the Carcharodon. 230 meters away, the Ultramarine's rifle coughed again. Gabanon's bolter was smashed from his hand. It hit the rockcrete and skidded out of reach. Strigo was almost on him now. Gabanon saw the razor-lined grin on that ugly, pasty, barely human face. He met those all-black eyes and saw death in them. Strigo was his death. He tried to reject the thought, but it insisted on him, refusing to be denied.
Ironic.
It had always been Strigo whom Gabanon had enjoyed the most.
"To me, then, Carcharodon. But it will not be easy."
Gabanon drew his knife one more time.
"For Manus and Medusa."
Chapter 58. Zeed felt searing pain in his left thigh. He looked down at his cuiss. The ceramite and adamantium had been scored away. The edges were smooth, like melted wax hardened. The coating of stealth cells and ablative resin had bubbled away. Cold Wave had been about to fire on Chiron. With Scimitar and the Dreadnought still on open ground, Zeed had acted in desperation, leaping out to fire his bolt pistol with his left hand while his right hurled a crack grenade. Had the grenade struck, it would have dealt a solid blow to the battlesuit. Instead, with boosted reflexes, Coldwave had managed to bat the grenade away with his Riptide's ruined shield arm. It exploded harmlessly,
some 40 meters away. Zeed's gambit had worked, however. The chasseur turned his attention to the closer threat and fired, punished the Raven Guard for his interference. Zeed, with his jump pack restored to 40% efficiency, had barely managed to evade the shot. The loss of its shield should have made the Riptide a much easier kill. Instead, it seemed only to have jolted the pilot awake. Chiron fired on it and missed. Broden's assault cannon chewed armor from its left shoulder, but the massive machine boosted laterally, and the Terminator-suited Templar lost line of sight. Zeed was back in cover beside Voss now, cursing under his breath.
Omni, we have to lock him down!
If he didn't have so many damned infantry.
Prophet, can't you get a bead on him? Shoot out his jets?
There was a grunt over the Vox.
If he keeps...
A spear of light scored one of the cargo containers northeast of the ship, cutting it almost in two. It collapsed. The containers stacked atop it slid and tumbled.
Prophet!
Shouted Voss.
Damn! Hissed Solarian. That one was for me. Relocating!
Zeed saw the Riptide appear on the starboard wing of the Tau ship, gaining line of sight on him and Voss.
Omni, watch yourself!
He called out, and boosted forward, surging into the cover of the ship's curving fuselage. Voss turned and immediately began blazing away at the battlesuit. A dozen bolter rounds hit, biting fist-sized chunks from frontal armor. The Riptide weathered the storm and raised its ion accelerator to return fire. Voss lunged, barely in time. The cover behind him collapsed into growing slag. He felt the heat of the blast through his armor before temperature control systems compensated and shunted the excess away from his flesh. He was in plain sight now, nowhere to hide, nothing to shield him. The next shot would bring a quick death. Defiantly, he planted his feet wide and swung the muzzle of his Infernus around.
Let's have you then, Xenos bastard! I die with Dawn's eyes upon me.
From his cockpit, Cold Wave looked down at the bulky space marine and grinned. Here was a bold one, and his boldness would cost him his life. There was great pleasure to be had in obliterating one of the